This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Welcome to Radioactive Radio. I'm your host, Pat Reilly, this evening, and my guests, plural, this evening. I'm very honored to have them. I have Ms. Eileen Sheehan, COO of Hope House, and Ms. Shanice Gibson, who is the community outreach educator for the Friends of Yates organization in Wyandotte County, Kansas City, Kansas. Thank you all for coming down and saying hello to this evening.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Our topic this evening is something that is kind of near and dear to my heart, and of course the two ladies that are here this evening, and that is domestic violence and some of the issues that are facing us in the community. If you had a chance to look at the Kansas City Star on Sunday, there was an op-ed piece in there about a young lady out in Overland Park who was abused by her husband and eventually killed, and obviously went through the right steps and the processes in order to try and protect ourselves, protect herself, but it ended up the bad way. I just want to give a real quick statistic here. One of the websites that I went to was the NCADV, which is the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And their definition of domestic violence, if I could read it to you real quick, and then we'll talk with Eileen and Shanice about this. Domestic violence is the willful intimidation, physical assault, battery, sexual assault, and or other abusive behavior as part of a systematic pattern of power and control perpetrated by one intimate partner against another. It includes physical violence, sexual violence, threats, and emotional abuse. The frequency and severity of domestic violence can vary dramatically. Would you two agree with that assessment or that definition?
Yes, I would. I mean, I think that it's really, domestic violence doesn't matter what color you are, doesn't matter how much money you have, where you come from, that it is a pattern of events, and it doesn't know any boundaries. It happens in every walk of life. And it happens behind closed doors, and it's something that we quite often choose to ignore in our society.
I would have to agree with Eileen. Domestic violence is very complex. It's not just physical abuse or just sexual abuse. It's often multiple forms of abuse, economic, social abuse. Using a male privilege is something we see with domestic violent victims, especially with victim blaming being a part of our society, and not believing the woman or that he's a good guy, or, you know, that he would never do that. And often when it comes to domestic violence or intimate partner violence and murder specifically, people rarely believe that it could ever get to that level, and until it is at that level.
You know, quite often the question always is, why don't victims just leave? Rather than the question is why does the perpetrator or why does that partner abuse? Which is really the question that we should be asking, because they're the ones breaking the law. It's not really the victim of the assault that we should be questioning. That's domestic violence, sexual assault. When we question why isn't the victim doing something to protect themselves, those are the only crimes that we've ever asked that of a victim. We never ask a bank, why in the world do you have money in your bank when you know that there are people out there that rob you?
Yeah,
We're
throwing the onus on the victim.
Correct. Yes. Mm-hmm. Those are the only type of crimes that we ever put that back on. And I think that we need to change that and to take ownership of where that belongs. That belongs back on the perpetrator.
Correct. Now, one thing I was digging around on on the website and the statistics, in 1991, the Kansas legislature enacted mandates that required all Kansas law enforcement agencies to adopt written policies regarding their procedures responding to domestic violence incidents within their jurisdiction. And I dug up a Kansas domestic violence incident and arrest trend. Now, this covers the entire state of Kansas, I'm assuming. In just a couple of numbers here real quick. In 2017, there were 22,708 incidents reported. That was down about 1.3% from 2016. But of those 22,000 plus incidents, the number of incidents with arrests was 11,356. So about 50% of the incidents resulted in an arrest of some sort. Incidents were per 1,000 population, about 7 incidents, 7.5 incidents per 1,000. That's a pretty high statistic.
Absolutely.
I did some calls to a couple of communities here on the Missouri side, too, just to get some numbers. Had several of them that didn't call me back, but two that I did contact. I won't mention the communities, but one is the one that I live in, which is a little bit east of here. As of November 1st, 2017, they had 332. As of November 1st of 2018, they had 221. So down just a little bit. The other community that I contacted through November 1st of 17 had 396. Through November 1st of 2018, 455. So that community had gone up considerably. I asked the officers that I talked to, is there any explanation or anything that you're finding that's a causal factor of this? Because I have heard, you know, again, one of those, they say that sometimes during the holidays, it seems like some of the incidents will increase a little bit because of the stress and family factors and things like that. I don't know if it's true. The officers that I talked to did not specifically say that, you know, that was a causal factor that they found. Do you find anything in your day-to-day as far as what might be a stimulus or something that brings about more incidents, time frames or things, or is it, you know, just it is what it is with the perpetrators, you know?
I would say that's a hard question to answer straight off the bat because everything is dependent upon the perpetrator. They can be triggered by something at work and will wait till they get home and take it out on their significant other. So to say, I wouldn't know off the top of what that, you know, if there's a different cause in winter or in summer, you know, where the numbers come from. But I would say that I could see where winter, everyone is in the house more. And so that could potentially be where that explanation is coming from.
There seems to be, you know, one of the things that I noticed between the two programs and the similarities between the two programs, is a program called Bridge Span, S-P-A-N. And I'm going to have, Eileen, if you could just talk a little bit about Bridge Span and the idea behind it and how that works as far as the advocacy and working with the person who has been abused.
Sure. Bridge Span program is where we go in and we train at the hospitals, we train doctors and nurses to screen for domestic violence. And if they have someone that screens in and would like to have an advocate respond out, we will respond out to the hospital 24/7. We'll respond out. And when we're responding out, we will talk about safety planning if someone wants to get into shelter, just wants to know about resources. One of the things that I'm really proud about the Bridge Span program and our collaboration with the other domestic violence agencies that offer this program is that we do not just sit and wait for people to call our hotline and look for us for a service. We are also working with our community partners to let them know on how to access people that are coming to them and give them information on domestic violence. And then we also will engage them into our services because we know that people are going to the ER, whether it's for injuries from abuse, or maybe they're going to the ER because they have a migraine or they have a broken bone because they were in a soccer match and broke, you know, just something of out of an everyday life injury, we're going to screen for domestic violence. Now, we're going to engage them into the domestic violence world if that's what they need. We'll respond out. We will coordinate our services. They want an advocate come out. Sometimes we're just safety planning with them. Sometimes those people that are coming to the hospital never even realized that they had options available to them. They never realized that there was a domestic violence agency out there with services available. They never realized there was anything else but the abuse that they were encountering in their home because they've been isolated by the abuse or they're embarrassed by what's going on. So this is just a great program that the hospitals have coordinated with us to be able to offer the service.
Now speaking to the hospitals, and we talked about this just a little bit earlier, what hospitals do you partner with here on the Missouri side, which is pretty much Hope House's coverage area? So, you know, folks will know these are available to them and these folks are trained to be able to identify.
Well, Hope House specifically, we are in eastern Jackson County, and we work with Lee Summit Hospital, St. Luke's East, St. Mary's in Blue Springs, Center Point, Children's Mercy East, and then Truman Lakewood. And then there is Rose Brooks, who works with more hospitals that are located centrally in Kansas City. And then you have Synergy Services that are working with hospitals that are up north. And then we have our friends in over on the Kansas side.
And Shanice, what facilities do you all work with?
We work with Providence, and we also work with local clinics in the area.
Okay. And you also, I think, mentioned St. John's up in Leavenworth, was it?
No, we don't work with them any longer.
Oh, okay.
I think another shelter has taken
okay.
that over.
Okay. And one of the things that I thought was a fantastic idea is the court advocacy.
Yes.
Could you touch on that a little bit, Shanice, and what that all entails?
So the court advocacy is a court advocate. She will help obtain a PFA, which is a protection from abuse. Also, oftentimes there may be kids involved. So if they, the victim needs to find or get custody or change a custody agreement that's already in place, she can assist them with the legal side of things. Now, she's not a lawyer, so but if they need representation, she can help finding potentially a pro bono lawyer or a lawyer that will do it at a cheaper rate. Also, she can help them navigate the legal system in general, so taking them to the court dates if they need a ride or transportation may be an obstacle. Also, if they don't feel comfortable going by themselves or now, sometimes they may just accompany them to the courtroom, but they can't speak on their behalf or things like that. But we do it all. So protections from abuse, custody, if they are needing help with citizenship, we have access to the Kansas Coalition, which is KCSDV, and they have immigration attorneys that we can do an application with to see if they can get assistance through them.
Eileen, could you talk just a little bit about the Children's Advocacy Program as part of the outreach and the bridge span?
Yeah, we have family and children's advocates who work within our shelter program, who work with the children that come into shelter and really work with them in. A lot of times our children are traumatized, and just we need to figure out in a starting point and help these kids who have just come from one extreme to the other. And really our focus is just getting them to a spot where they can be a kid.
In many instances, they're kind of used as a pawn in the process too, aren't they?
Correct. They come and they can... Kids, again, react in so many different ways with that, whether they become come in and once they're relieved that they don't have this pressure over them, then they become acting out because they're now able to express themselves. Mm-hmm. So we then work with how they can do that in a healthy way. Or maybe we have a 12-year-old who's resorting back to wetting the bed. And then we have to figure out how to help the mom work with that. Or we have a child who is basically running the household. And we want that, you know, 7-year-old to be a 7-year-old.
Be a kid.
Right.
Yeah.
So it just, it trauma does a lot of things to kids. Mm-hmm. And we, that's what our children's advocates do, is working with the children and with mom in how to, what works best for them.
Now, Shanice, would that also include like a supervised visitation of non-custodial parent or and things like that, if they're in one of those types of situations, you know?
That would actually be through a different program. We would refer out for that, for the visitation. Are you saying with an abuser?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would, that would have to go through the court. So our family or child care advocate.
So that would come into the legal aspect of the outreach.
They would set that up, but we wouldn't sit there as an advocate with the visitation.
I see.
So that would be an outside party. What about your
Hope
program?
House actually has a supervised visitation program where we offer monitored exchange and supervised visits in Independence. We're just down the street from the courthouse, and we do have coordinators who coordinate the visit, and we have monitors who monitor the visit, and we do have off-duty police officers there, and the parents do not have contact with each other, and we coordinate times where there's separate drop-off and pickup, and it's a fantastic program where the children can come, and if they're ordered to do the visit at the program, they can come. We drop off, pick up, no contact with each other with the parents. They can come, they come in, they have a visit, and they get to be a kid with that non-custodial parent for that hour or 2 hours, however long they're ordered for a visit, and it is a fantastic program. And then come back, do the exchange back, and then we're done. We are open Sunday through Friday, and just were able to expand our hours, and we also got a grant through Royals Charity to also help us buy brand new furniture, which we've been in operations for 16 years and never had brand new furniture over there, so we were really excited about that.
Wow. I would imagine, you know, besides all of this, one of the biggest aspects of both of your facilities or your operations is providing a safe haven and shelter. Now, I believe you, Hope House has some 120 beds available for victims?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We have two locations, one in Independence and one in Lee Summit. And between both locations, we can house up to 122 in shelter.
Yeah. I'll get back to that in just a second.
Mm-hmm.
Shanice, how about the Gillis and Francie Yates and the Gillis program?
Huh? It's the Della Gill Joyce H. Williams Domestic Violence Center, and we actually just went through an expansion over the last year, and so we now can we have 44 beds available, but those are. We do our rooms a little differently. So we have family rooms and then we have single rooms. And so that may fluctuate depending on the size of the family we have to accommodate.
And I'm assuming that a big part of the safe haven is helping them find down the line a place that is nude for them and safe for them and, you know, gives them comfort and ease as they transition out of the abusive relationship.
Yes. So we help with finding jobs if they need to find a new place of employment because he may or she may come to their place of work and they may lose their jobs because of the harassment or calling or things like that. And then we also help with housing after they've gone through some program, finding employment, counseling, things like that, so we can help them find housing after.
Now, one of the things that I was doing some research on with your facility, the Friends of Yates, is the PAVE program, and that is, let me read my notes here, get the glasses on,
okay.
The Pathway to Advocacy for Violence-Free Living and Economic Empowerment. Can you touch on that just a little bit and kind of tell us about that PAVE program?
Yes, that is a grant that we received through DCF. When women are receiving TANF, they have to complete or they have to do certain amount of hours for work or in volunteering, excuse me. And they, if they're victims of domestic violence, they can be referred to us. We have a PAVE case manager, and she can help them with those hours. So they'll get counseling, outreach services, and different things about DV education. They can get everything that they would get in shelter as an outreach client, and they'll meet them either at their meeting with their case manager at the DCF office or at a location where they agree upon. And it's just to help them kind of meet those hours, because sometimes they can't get jobs because their abuser is in the home and he, I don't know, for whatever reason, may take the car or take their checks, and they can't meet the goals of DCF and for the TANF. And so it's an alternative route for victims of domestic violence to still get those hours that they need for that assistance, and to also hopefully end the cycle of domestic violence.
So essentially what it does is it kind of lets them build a purse up, as it were, so that they can strike out on their own and have, you know, their the money and the things that they will need to establish themselves in a new, you know, a new setting.
Right. It's a empowerment tool. So they'll get a plan that will consist of goals that they want to reach. And then they'll also get DV training, education and counseling. And they will work towards these goals with a case manager that will also help them do any appointments or anything that they need assistance with to become independent and to get out of that cycle of domestic violence until they're, and then on top of receiving the assistance from DCF. So it's to help them become empowered and independent.
Wonderful. Another thing that I saw that I thought was really interesting too, that you had one of the programs was the Teen Dating Violence and Protection Programs.
Yes.
Can you touch on that just a little bit? Because it seems like, you know, what we see or what we're seeing more and more now, or that I'm reading about, is the control through media with Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all this, the bullying aspect and the type of control that is described as one of the features of domestic violence. So I'm assuming this is touching a little bit on that as they start in that process of dating. And
yes, so this is one of my things that I'm passionate about. So I get to go out to schools in District 500 and during the health fairs, and we get to talk about well, I don't call it teen dating violence because they're like, oh, I'm not being abused. And So what we do, though, I have them tell me what love is, and we'll play this game, and they want the candy, so they are very engaged. But and we just talk about what healthy relationship traits are. And so I'll say, you know, is it abusive, or I won't use abusive because it's kind of leading, but is it abusive if your boyfriend or girlfriend checks on you, you know, if they call and text you? Well, what if they call and text you 50 times in a row, back to back, and then kind of show them the signs, like, oh. And it's interesting because sometimes they'll be like, oh, like, that's considered abusive. You know, I just thought he was being caring or trying to know my whereabouts. And it's just kind of showing them those red flags. And I also have a display board, so that has the red flags. And the CDC released a report last year that said that over, I think it was 18 million, it was a big number, I don't know off the top of my head, but over 18 million people were introduced to intimate partner violence before the age of 18. So it's something that the CDC knows of, and that I'm sure that all the agencies know of, that it's something that's happening to the youth.
One of the things that I had had dug up on the Hope House website, Eileen, was some of the things you talked about. Shanice just talked about, you know, what are some of the things that you will look at and say, oh, is that abusive, or is that just somebody caring about me? And I noticed that there was a circle, and the circle had several different items on there, as a matter of fact, and I'm just going to read these real quick, and so you're familiar with them. This, the power and control circle is what I call it. Threats, intimidation, economic abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, isolation, manipulation, and using children. And probably boiling it down to quick three, when does not honor your boundaries. Like you said, you know, calling 40 or 50 times, showing up at work, then demanding to know who, where you are, who you're with. Says one thing or does another. And an inconsistent past. Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds like he's too good to, he or she is too good to be, because folks, domestic violence happens to men too, as well as women. I would imagine the statistics are a little bit higher for women as being the victims as opposed to men, but there's no doubt men are abused too. What do you see out there, especially among the teens, Shanice, out of those that you seem to find when you're talking with them as being one that strikes them as being the most focal point that they, I see that. Is it the intimidation or maybe the isolation keeping you from your friends, or, you know, trying to turn your friends away from you so, you know, you're the only person you can count on?
Right. I would say in our dialogue at the health fairs, it's a little bit of everything. Honestly, it's the isolation. So when they're not at school, they want them to be at their house or hanging out with their friends. A lot of it seems to be in embarrassing them in front of their friends or their peer groups. So he or she may say a joke in front of everyone in the hall that everyone can hear, so embarrassing them. Is another tactic that me and a girl discussed at one of the schools that she hadn't realized beforehand.
And I think that just to tap onto what she's saying there, is that emotional abuse is so big that, and that's not something that you normally can call the police and report. We will have victims tell us that they'd rather be physically abused than emotionally abused, because those bruises heal, but that emotional abuse is constant. It's not something that you can really prove. And it breaks your spirit. It breaks who you are. It breaks your self-esteem. And then that's exactly what a batterer wants, to gain control, is to break you emotionally. Because once you are broken and you don't think that anybody loves you and that you are crazy and that nobody has any worth for you but them, that they are all you have, where else are you going to go?
Well, I even know of instances with friends where the emotional abuse started from their parents at a very young age.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it got to a situation with one person that I know, it was, I'm getting a reaction. It might be a negative reaction, but at least I'm being paid attention to, or somebody is, you know, thinking about me, even though they're thinking about them and abusing them the wrong way. So I can see how that pattern could develop and manifest itself over a period of time, and you would just fall in with a person who continues the pattern that you have adopted for quite a long period of time.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we only have about a minute left, and we could go on, I'm sure, for another hour talking about this, because it is, you know, something that's very much at the forefront of in our day-to-day lives. We've seen it in the national level.
Yes.
It's played out in the press for the last couple of years, and, you know, of course, you all see it on an everyday basis. Shanice, real quickly, can you give us some contact information?
Yes.
The hotline number and maybe a website or address for the Friends of Yace in Wyandotte County.
Okay. We have a local number, which is 913-321-0951. That is our local hotline. If you're not in the local area, you can call our 24-hour crisis hotline at 855-232-0252. And our web address is friendsofyates.org.
And Eileen?
Well, and we have a metro hotline, and it's 816 hotline, and that is all between all six shelters in the metropolitan area, so that you do not have to have each shelter's number. So they will help you get connected with all of the shelters in the area. But Hope House specific number is 816 461 1-800-273-4673.
Great. Thank you very much, Shanice. Eileen, I appreciate very much y'all taking the time to come down and talk with us about this topic, and maybe we can get together and do this again real soon, because it's very important to our community and what's going on in our everyday life. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you for taking the time.
Okay, and thank you for tuning in to Radioactive Magazine. I want to again thank Shanice Gibson of Friends of Yates and Eileen Sheehan of the Hope House, and our host this week, Pat Riley, for an interesting discussion. Tune again at the same time next week. And just a little bit of upcoming calendar information. Showing Up for Racial Justice KC is having an event on Thursday, November 29th, from 6:30 to 8:30, Deconstructing Internalized White Supremacy. Now, the place is to be announced, so check out your friend Google to find out where that's at. The Missouri Jobs with Justice presents a tech sample book, Working Class Rage, a launch party and talk with Tech Simple. If you've never talked to Tex, he's a very interesting man, and I'm really looking forward to reading his book, Working Class Rage. That's Friday, November 30th, 6 to 8 at St. Paul's Episcopal Church, 11 East 40th Street. So stay tuned right here. Now, also later on this week, stay tuned to KKFI on the Heartland Labor Forum this week. Since it is Thanksgiving Day, they're going to do a rebroadcast of How Labor Defeated Right to Work and Now What. So tune into that. And following that is River City Chautauqua on Thursday night. So stay tuned here tonight for Counterspin, followed by Taste of Tejano, all starting right after the following messages.